Exodus, Ten Commandments, Chapter 20. Exodus, Chapter 20. I'm going to be reading starting in verse 4. 4, 5, and 6. Exodus, Chapter 20. I'm in the New American Standard. You shall not make for yourself an idol or any likeness of what is in heaven above, or on the earth beneath, or in the water under the earth. You shall not worship them or serve them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, visiting the inquiry of the fathers on the children, on the third and the fourth generations of those who hate me, but showing loving kindness to thousands, to those who love me and to keep my commandments.
Thank Brother Gary for the Bible reading this morning. Kind of have to adjust the new microphones. You got okay there? Good. We're going to continue in our series on the Ten Commandments in this early session. In the previous lesson, we looked at the first of the Ten Commandments, "You shall have no other gods before me." And so in this lesson, we will look at the second of those commandments, "You shall not make for yourselves an idol." Actually, if you look at the text of Exodus, this commandment is really the lengthiest of all the commandments in terms of what all is said and included about it. There are several elements in the commandment that provide more depth and more than just a simple summary statement of the command. The statement of the command is very simple: don't make an idol. But as we look at that this morning, we want to look at some of the things that are said in the text about that. And the first thing is to point out is that this is one of two of the Ten Commandments that God gives a reason for the commandment when he gives the commandment. He says, "You shall not make for yourselves an idol, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God." And depending upon the translation in which you read, it basically will say, "I am the Lord." It's usually set apart by some type of publisher's method. The New American Standard, which I use, capitalizes all four letters of the word Lord. And that's simply because this word in the Hebrew is the sacred name of God. It is four letters. Hebrew is written in the original language. It's a consonantal language. It does not have vowels. And so a Hebrew person would naturally make the right sounds going with the combination of the letters. That sounds very difficult to me. In modern Hebrew, when I took Hebrew in college, they used what were called vowel pointings, little notations above each consonant to tell you what kind of vowel sound to make with the consonant. The problem with that is that there's no agreement necessarily about what the Hebrews would have done naturally. So the way in which we traditionally see this word and see it in our hymn books and things like that is the word Jehovah. That's supplying what we would think of as common English vowels that go with the letters. Probably the more correct rendering of it is something like Yahweh, and I can't even make the good Hebrew guttural sound that's necessary to pronounce that. But that is his proper name, and it's an expanded form. When God appeared to Moses in the burning bush and he said, "Who shall I say sent me?" He simply said, "I am," which is Yah. And so Yahweh is a little longer form of that. But the significance is, he says, I am the Lord your God. And the other word, God, is the word Elohim, which is the word, the fruit El, E-L, which you find a lot in Bible names. Which the word El means God. And it's the word that's used in the book of Genesis, where it says God said, and creation occurred. And so it is the designation of the power of deity. And so the significance of this, really, in giving the reason you shall not make for yourself a graven image, he says, first of all, the reason is because I'm your God. He just told him, don't have any other gods before me. Now he says, and don't try to make anything that you will worship as a god instead of me. Because I am your God. And the second thing that he says in relationship to this is that I am a jealous God. And that word is a very unique word in the Hebrew language. The Hebrew word itself is not, it doesn't come over into our English language in any way that we would recognize. It's the Hebrew word kana. But what is so interesting about that word is the meaning of it. It can mean zealous, or it can mean jealous, or it can mean envious. So the theological word book of the Old Testament says this about this word. This verb expresses a very strong emotion whereby some quality or possession of the object is desired by the subject. That is, it expresses me as the subject's desire concerning something that I believe is mine. And it's a word that is used a lot in the Old Testament. It's used 87 times in the Old Testament. That source goes on to say the word is used both positively and negatively in the Old Testament and is translated by the English word zeal, jealous, and envy. And then the theological word book of the Old Testament really illustrates it this way. If I have zeal for another's property, that's envy. If I have zeal for my own property, that's jealousy. But the significance in terms of this in the Ten Commandments is that this word is used most frequently of the marriage relationship. And a proper understanding of the second commandment, that you shall not make for yourself an idol, really rests upon how the word was used in Hebrew in reference to marriage. So the theological word book goes on to say, the central meaning of our word, however, relates to jealousy, especially in the marriage relationship. Adultery was punishable by death, Leviticus 20 and verse 10, Deuteronomy 22 and verse 22. By marriage, the two became one flesh, Genesis 2 and verse 24. Hence, adultery was a severing of the body. Adultery is a form of murder. So the theological word book goes on to say one other thing. He says, God is depicted as Israel's husband. He is a jealous God. Idolatry is spiritual adultery and merits death. Thus, what we find in this command is that Yahweh is demanding that Israel be his faithful bride. That's why it's so serious to God when his people make and worship idols and serve other gods instead of him. So with that in mind, we go and just look at the simple elements of the command. There's really two parts to this command. The first is, you shall not make for yourself an idol. And that word make implies human effort. It's a manufacturer. Man has to do something to make something. And we live in a world where we fully recognize that. And so I'm not going to beat on that any more than that. But the second part of it is he says, you shall not make for yourselves. So the intent is, I'm going to do this for me out of my desire, out of my will. And he says, you don't exercise your will that way, to make for yourself an idol. And there's really two things they are told not to make. The first is an idol. And that word in Hebrew simply means to hew into shape. So in this case, make doesn't mean take components and put them together. It means you take something and you mold it or shape it into what you want it to be. The prophet Isaiah, in a passage I think most of us probably are somewhat familiar with, in Isaiah 44, as Isaiah speaks out against the foolishness of idolatry, really gets to the point of this command about making. He describes the foolishness of this. And so he says in verse 9 of Isaiah 44, those who fashion a graven image are all of them futile, and their precious things are of no profit. Even their own witnesses fail to see or know, so that they will be put to shame. Who has fashioned a god or cast an idol to no profit? Behold, all his companions will be put to shame, for the craftsmen themselves are mere men. So there's make for yourself, men making for men. Let them all assemble themselves, let them stand up, let them tremble, let them together be put to shame. The man shapes iron into a cutting tool and does his work over the coals, fashioning it with hammers and working it with his strong arm. He gets hungry and his strength fails. He drinks no water, becomes weary. Another shapes the wood. He extends a measuring line. He outlines it with red chalk. He works it with planes and outlines it with a compass and makes it like the form of a man, like the beauty of man, so that it may sit in a house. Surely he cuts cedar for himself and takes a cypress or an oak and raises it for himself among the trees of the forest. He plants a fir and the rain makes it grow. Then it becomes something for a man to burn. He takes one of them, one of the trees, and warms himself. He also makes a fire to bake bread. He also makes a god and worships it. He makes it a graven image and falls down before it. Half of it he burns in the fire. Over this half he eats meat as he roasts the roast and is satisfied. He also himself warms and says, aha, I am warm. I have seen the fire. But the rest of it he makes into a god, his graven image. He falls down before it and worships. He also prays to it and says, deliver me, for you are my God. And so Isaiah says, man makes it for himself. And then he worships it. But the other word is the word likeness. And this really gets to the root of idolatry. A likeness is a representation, a making of something in the form, particularly in the form of something that God has already created. And that was a common practice of idolatry. The gods that the pagans worshipped took the form of men or of animals or of very imaginative combinations of both. They had some animal characteristics and some human characteristics. But the point of this command is that Yahweh is the creator. He created man and he revealed himself to Israel that he is the source of their life and their being. He is their God. And so the basic problem with idolatry is that it attributes the attributes and powers of the creative deity to those things which he created. Thus, it is a worship of that which God has created rather than a worship of God who is the creator. And the Apostle Paul makes that very clear to us in a passage we're all familiar with in Romans chapter 1, where he says, "For even though they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks, but they became futile in their speculations, and their foolish heart was darkened. Professing to be wise, they became fools, exchanged the glory of the incorruptible God for an image in the form of corruptible man and of birds and of four-footed animals and crawling creatures. And therefore God gave them over in the lust of their heart to impurity so that their bodies would be dishonored among them. For they exchanged the truth of God for a lie, and they worshipped and served the creature rather than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen." So you don't make idols and you don't make likenesses of the things that God has created them, created, and then worship them as God. And for the last couple of moments, I want to talk about really what does this command prohibit? When we read the command, what does it really say? Some come to the conclusion that the mere existence of images and likenesses is prohibited by the command. And thus, that would cause them to reject all symbols, all works of art, all pictures, assuming that they are prohibited by the command. Some narrow that and just say you cannot use religious images. And you see this in the church from time to time. I once worshiped a church where a very good brother that I loved and one of the leaders would not allow us to use literature that had any picture depicting Jesus because he did not think we should have any images in our literature. I remember as a young fellow at Florida College, somebody's at the door again, a time when one of the congregations decided to swarm. They'd gotten too large and they bought a church building. There was a club on campus of people that intended to preach. And they said, "Would you come over and you help us with this building?" Because it had been sitting empty for a couple years. And if any of you know anything about Florida, if it sits empty for a couple years, that means the parking lot was full of weeds. There was vines growing all over the building, etc. And they just needed not smart preachers. They needed young men that would work. So we went over there on a Saturday to do this. And it had been a community church of some sort. And we were outside trying to get the outside of the building presentable, trying to clean up the parking lot so cars could park in it. And you heard the sound coming from inside the building. And went in there, and there was one of my fellow students who, upon his own, had taken a hammer and a chisel because the oak pews in this building had crosses on the side of them. And without asking anybody, he was taking the chisel and gouging out all of the crosses. And when somebody said something to me, he said, "That's idols. They're idols. We cannot worship idols." And his point was, it was the image of the cross, and that was a graven image, and that was an idol. And so the question is that what this command leads us to? Well, you look at that, and he commands them not to do is not to make the image and not to worship the image or the likeness. The Hebrew word for worship there literally means to bow down, which is what they would do in worship, bow before God. Acts of worship and adoration are specifically prohibited by this command. You don't make an image and you don't worship that image. The second thing that's commanded is you don't serve the image that you make. Serving the images or likenesses is the work or toiling on behalf of the idol or the likeness. And this would include the acts of sacrifice and religious service. This is what the Jews violated when they grew the groves and carved the trees and the likeness of the Phoenician gods, Baal and Asherah, and started worshiping them. That's the violation of the command, and it led God to treat them as spiritual adulterers and punish them as he said he would if they did that. Now here's a point that I think is a great illustration of that. And this is the familiar story of the brazen serpent in Numbers 21 verses 6 through 9. You may remember this story. Israel was on the journeys in the wilderness, and they grumbled against God and against Moses. And God sent what we would call venomous snakes among them. They're called fiery serpents in the Old Testament. And it started biting them and they started dying. So God instructed Moses to erect the image of the serpent and put it on a pole. And said, when you get bit by a serpent, if you look to that pole, it will not kill you. Now, if what some people understand this second commandment to mean was true, God was ordering Israel to violate the very command that he had given them. If just having or making an image. But since God commanded Moses to make the image and gave the instructions for its use, I think we can safely conclude that that was not a violation of the second commandment. The mere existence of a piece of artwork that looked like a serpent is not a violation of the command. However, later on in Scripture, when we come to 2 Kings chapter 18 and verse 4, and good King Hezekiah, as a very young man, becomes king after one of the worst periods in Judah's history in terms of their idolatry, he determines to get rid of the idolatry in Judah, and that includes getting rid of the Baal and the Asherah. But in 2 Kings 18 and verse 4, it tells us that he took the brazen serpent that Moses had made at God's command and destroyed it because Judah, in their idolatry, had begun to worship it as an idol and burn incense to it. So can we see the difference there between there being an object and you worshiping the object? So, we need to obey this command. But a woman wearing a piece of jewelry that looks like a cross, or a man wearing a pair of praying hands on his lapel as a pin, unless you're worshiping it and serving it as your God, that is not an idolatrous act, and that is not a violation of this command. And I think our biblical reasoning for that is to look at the brazen serpent. What we need to be warned about is spiritual adultery. That's what idolatry was. And Israel became unfaithful to their covenant with God. And when their prophets came to them, beginning like with Hosea and on through Jeremiah and Ezekiel, that's exactly what they were depicted as being, was being adulterers. Because they had been unfaithful to God. That's what we want to avoid. We do not want to be spiritual adulterers. In the 21st century, we do not live surrounded by those who have made graven images and who worship them. They still exist in this world, but generally we're not surrounded by them. But we are surrounded by people who worship the creature rather than the creator. And that's the influence that we need to be concerned about. And we need to avoid that in every aspect of our life. I think Brother Pugh has the prayer, and then we will be dismissed to our Bible class.